to sell these works. And so there has been quite a bit of backlash from artists whose works, that have not necessarily put their works into the public domain, but whose works are accessible through the internet. Their works are being used to train some of these models, and people are using their styles of art to generate new images and selling these images. So is that an unfair use of an artist's work to use an AI to generate similar works and then to sell them? Because it seems like you are using an AI to compete with an artist in the artist's own style, which is, I think, a sense of cruel irony.
Why do you say it's cruel irony?
Well, it's essentially like, if I was the enemy of an artist and I wanted to ruin them, what better way to ruin them than to learn their style of art and to put them out of business by making art in their own style that then essentially puts that artist out of the market. I can't think of any more nefarious thing that you could do as a human being to an artist.
Yeah.
Which is essentially what is being done by these artificial intelligences and the people who use them. So I don't know if everyone has kind of thought that through in that way before, but from the perspective of someone who's creating art, if you take their work and copy the style of it and then create new work and then sell it at a price far lower than the work that the first artist produced. Essentially, you are, I forget the saying, but you are basically just, you're trying to short sell. That's it.
You're trying to run them out of the market.
Yeah. Yeah. You're trying to destroy their livelihood, which is not, you know, morally ambiguous. It's not morally ambiguous. It's a very, I guess you could say, morally obvious notion that type of position is not something that's beneficial. Now, on the other side of things, you have had artists that imitate each other's work and they compete with each other. And that has been allowed or disallowed in various ways. Some people have spoken to a lack of originality on part of some artists because they mimic other people's work. Other people have essentially said that all art is imitation and that imitating art is kind of a form of flattery, and it's something that everyone does in the learning process, but also how artists become better by imitating other artists and by learning new techniques and how they made their masterpieces their masterpieces.
Yeah, I don't imagine any other way of becoming a good artist than going to a masterpiece, putting yourself in front of it and really looking at it and saying, and asking yourself, well, what's really going on here? And inevitably you're going to internalize what you see, and it will influence what you produce. That's the nature of this, and that's fine. But it seems to be there does seem to be this kind of friction between the, you know, the painter going to the museum and putting themselves in front of a Vermeer and a data set that has trained itself on Vermeers and can now produce Vermeers, or you can produce things in the style of Vermeer. Yeah.
Did you have any thoughts on the previous comment about kind of the cruel irony of artificial intelligence?
Yeah, so about that too, the thing about this is we're talking about artists in a kind of economic sense where all working artists are working to make a living off their art. They are kind of satisfying, and I know like supply and demand is like a very simplified way of talking about economics, but you can very easily satisfy the demand for an artist's work with this AI image generation. Say you want to commission a particular artist, well, there's plenty of people who will be willing to work their AI to produce the work that you want from that artist. The thing with that is there's only one artist who is producing these originals. And I think the ironic part that you're gesturing towards is that they're kind of producing the very things that will be used to undermine their own work, which is, if I can use an ethical term here, it's quite vicious. There's a kind of ensnaring trap here, which is a bit unfortunate and might hint towards the nature, the ethical structure of AI. You have one artist, they are producing works, maybe there's a demand for their work. In every case, it seems as though that someone can come along and do that for them. Maybe multiple people can do that for them. I don't know really where to go from here other than to suggest that there's something kind of inherently occupational about this. I don't know if this hinges, it might hinge on the nature of artists and the structure of the work that they do, but this seems really to be about a displacement of labor or a sort of decentralization of labor. Think about any laborer doing kind of low-skilled work. They're just totally replaceable, you know, folding boxes or whatever. You can train people to do that pretty quick, but you can't train someone to do art, the art of someone else very easily. That's, they're a laborer, but only this person can produce the kind of labor for which there is a demand. AI seems to offer an alternative, or it seems to make it so that that labor isn't so unique to that laborer anymore. If there's a demand, that demand can now be satisfied by multiple people, because now we have technology that can reproduce unique labor. The ethics of that, I mean, if a person is, so, okay, well, we can, you can train artists, you can train painters to paint Vermeers, you can train painters to reproduce paintings. I mean, that's how they train themselves. They go in front of these masterpieces and they, you know, they practice a lot. But in this case, it seems to have to do with the, because you're discussing the fairness of kind of undercutting labor in relation to undermining a person's sort of their income, basically.
I guess the alternative version of this, and this is something that artists have already had to deal with for a long time, is the problems of black markets and counterfeit works. So if an artist produces a specific type of work and that work becomes highly valued, what often happens is that other people will try to create counterfeits of their work and pass them off as the originals. Is this essentially what these artificial intelligences are capable of doing? Are they afraid? Are they capable of creating counterfeits and then passing them off as originals? And I think it's the second part that needs to be addressed quite a bit, and that is that do we have a legal structure to prevent counterfeit things from being understood as original? And this is something that, you know, going back to the beginning of the talk, that's what the artist who sent their photograph into this competition, who won this competition, was trying to prove, is that we don't have a good enough mechanism for understanding whether or not an image is generated by AI. We haven't usually thought to ask that question or to prohibit the competition of those types of images in competitions. It's one thing if you took a picture of two people it's another thing if you had an AI-generated image of one person standing behind another person, and you have another image of two people, one behind, one in front. And I think that's kind of what this artist was saying when he says, look at this image. You can tell this image is not a photograph. That it was highly likely that either CGI or some other techniques were used to make this work.
Right.
Because this type of picture is not the type of picture that you would be able to take.
Photographs can only take certain kinds of images, you know. I mean, you could put a very good horn on a horse, and then you could have a photo of a unicorn. So we do seem to be able to take photographs, or we can make appear in photographs things that aren't real. I would be curious to know what it is about an AI image that this photographer is claiming that a photograph couldn't take. I imagine it's something like
this specific photograph. There's one person who looks like they're in a shadow behind the other person.
Oh, okay.
So the lighting of that is not something you would normally see.
Right.
It might be possible to create that in real life, but I doubt it. I think it would be basically almost only impossible through CGI techniques.
Yeah, and also I'm not doing this to like blur a line or anything. I'm really doing this just kind of like, I'm really just trying to really put them next to each other and wonder, okay, what's really going on here? Like, what, like, okay, this is an interesting thing to think that photographs can only do certain things. I mean, we tend to think that cameras are totally neutral. They can take pictures of anything, but it seems like they can't do certain things. Because we have cases of images that get passed off as photographs, which violate these laws of photography. And it's interesting because that wouldn't have occurred to me, at least. Photography bumps up against a wall, and now it knows its limits in a way, and that limit seems to be where AI can go. But maybe AI could probably replicate photographs. So is it a kind of superseding? Well, no, but
there are a lot of complexities in real environments that AI has a problem generating. And a lot of these are little things like lighting, like reflections on water, like the way people look at each other in a specific moment, or the way they hold their hands. Those are types of things that AIs have more trouble with, specifically hands. Like,
right.
If you think about how a human being uses their hands and the type of photos that you might create with that, or images you might create for that. For us, we kind of all know what it is. Like, a human hand has five fingers, the thumb is shorter than the other four, and it's presented in a certain way. If you look at a lot of AI-generated images of hands, and there are some models that are a little better now, a lot of the first models, a lot of the hands have like six fingers or seven fingers or eight fingers. The AI doesn't have a firm understanding that, you know, human beings only have so many fingers most of the time.
Right. Yeah. That's interesting, but I don't want to get too hung up on the fact of like, you know, AIs can't do this yet. That's something I try to avoid because, you know, it makes your discussion a little bit obsolete, or it makes it potentially obsolete when the AI can do that. And there is good reason to think that they will be able to do that because, and I'm getting this point from, I think it's a really convincing point for any kind of future proofing of discussions about this. I get it from Steven Zapata's excellent video essay. He says that, I mean, stuff like this would have been unimaginable even 5 years ago. So it's here. The unimaginable is here. So even things like improvements, those are perfectly imaginable. Those will happen. The unimaginable is coming because the unimaginable did arrive. So things like, you know, well, AIs can't do things like, you know, it's a good example, reproduce reflections in water. It will get there. I'm not holding that against AI. I'm more considering like, you know, like physical, you know, the physical laws of light or something like that. It seems to be able to produce images like that.
And I'm not saying, I mean, I know for myself that there are, in fact, AIs that are very good at producing reflections in water. I also know that if you ask them to, you know, reproduce, for instance, an image of an ocean, and to, you know, like, it would probably be able to do that. But would it be able to understand where the lighting is coming from? And that's the type of thing that I wonder, because for an artist, you know, you can know, you know, light comes from this direction in this photo. Light comes from this direction, so it doesn't come from other directions. Doesn't AI have that type of understanding or thought when it creates an image? Maybe. Maybe not. In the future, will it have that capability? Probably. Then the question becomes, well, what are the true limitations of AI? Some people would say that they have no limitations, that we can eventually create a artificial general intelligence that can do basically anything a human can. And we've had some discussions like this on the show before, where then the question becomes, fundamentally speaking, what separates a human being from something that can do all the things that a human being can? And when we've had that discussion before on the show, we've run into the problems of essentially bodily experience. So this is something that I talked about when we did a show on perception, that one of the perceptions that human beings have outside of our normal five physical senses is the sense of being in our own body. And then there are the mixed perceptions between being in your own body and your five senses of moods and emotions. And the question of what those things are, and can artificial intelligence use those things, is really an open question right now in computer science, mainly because we don't understand those things very, very well. Even when it comes to things like human memory, while we do have a good amount of research on it, it would be a far stretch to say that a artificial intelligence is currently at the point where it could understand a person's lived interaction with lived experience in their interaction with their own memories. That's the type of thing that I think an AI today would have the hardest type of thing replicating, because in order to replicate it, it would have to simulate that experience within its own mind, so to speak, which is not something that we currently have the capability to do. However, we've drifted a little bit away from the topic, although I think that I know the perfect way to draw us back in, and that is that if AI ever did reach that point where it could model lived experience in that way, and we can prove that it could, would we still reject it from having copyright status? Or would we then get to the point where, ethically speaking, AI should have the ability to own its own work if it could prove that it has the ability to have lived experience?
Yeah, this is a big question, and I don't have the answer to it. If an AI had the capacity to model lived experience, my thoughts on that would be that if it was an AI that looked anything like the AI we're talking about right now, it would have to draw on the lived experience of others and kind of have like a lived experience data set. And then you'd just be in the same place as with the AI images. Anyone that generates something out of that doesn't have the copyright. Well, according to the states in which these laws apply, that you wouldn't own that because the quote-unquote mind that is producing it is not your own. It's the neural network that is kind of drawing from this, or it that was trained on this data set. How you would train an AI on lived experience, you'd have to somehow reify lived experience such that a computer could model or be trained on that and then produce generative copies of that. That I don't know what that would
and
look
and
like.
And you raise an excellent point, Brandon. That's why a lot of people in computer science don't think that, that neural networks as a technique are capable of creating the ability to see lived experience, because that's not what they're designed to do. What they're designed to do is to be trained on large data sets to essentially perform an executive task, whether that is playing a simple board game like chess or creating a certain type of image, as we have seen in image generation and photography. And I think it is worth noting that the person who submitted this image had a very strong background in the field of art and photography. So even though he created this image with the help of artificial intelligence, it was his own lived experience as an artist and a photographer that you could argue helped him to do that. Now, because he, to say that in simple, in I guess more concrete terms, the fact that he knew like what the judges might accept, might not accept, the fact that he knew what art is as a human being, it's not obvious how much the system already knows and how much the person using the system's effect on what it knows influences it. Because if you have a highly knowledgeable user, then they are able to use the system in ways that a user who isn't knowledgeable is able to do. You're able to judge and critique the output of the artificial intelligence to get better results using your human knowledge.
In a lot of the people who I hear talk about doing this, who go through generating these images, there's a central theme of the kind of toying with it, of trying this and then trying that. You know, you try, so you have like a general idea of like what you want. You try these prompts first. This doesn't really work out. I want to change this. You're experimenting with it. There's a certain kind of play with it. That's the experience of doing this. In any generated image, there's always a person producing these prompts. I mean, it's not as if the AI unprompted generates images in the sense of, well, it's just going to start doing it. And even like, well, what's it going to generate? There has to be a person to initiate the process and to tell it what to produce. So in some ways, you're always going to have the image is always going to have this human element to it of, okay, well, here's an image of something someone wanted, and they found some, through a kind of practice and play and experimentation with a, you know, a kind of tool or toy, they managed to produce, or they managed to get it to produce something that probably because they stopped, they were happy with. I just say that too because you can have someone, like with this photographer, they know what is going to look good for this contest. They're going to be able to kind of take their cue from something else, like, you know, I need to produce an award-winning photograph. Just what would that look like? Well, guess what, you can't put in award-winning photograph. You need someone who has an idea of an award-winning photograph to then produce what that would look like, and that's going to look like a person with like a background and maybe certain tones and compositions or whatever, but it's always in reference to a person putting it into practice. And this is essentially the plausibility of the point that it's just another tool, it's just another way of a person doing this. I'm skeptical of the simplicity of that point. I think it is a tool for producing images. I don't know if it's just a tool. I think that as any good reader of Marshall McLuhan would think, that tools always kind of have their own internal logic. That's the plausibility of it's just a tool. It's just someone working with another way of producing images. If you look at the experience of what they're doing, that is what they're doing. They're entering into an experience other than create image. They don't just press a button. You can find them talking, not mythically, but they're lost in a kind of process of generation. It's not just the AI producing it.
To give the most uncharitable interpretation of that I can, it's like a baker making a cake from scratch versus someone taking a cake mix and adding three ingredients. I would say that that's kind of the analogy to, you have someone who's a photographer who thinks very, very hard about, you know, what kind of camera they want to use, what kind of photograph they want to take, what the lighting should be, what the subject of their photograph is going to be, the nature of like how they want the colors to interact, things like that. You can have someone who does all of those things on their own. And then you can have someone who kind of has an idea of what they want and then figures out like, okay, yeah, got it. Then they take a text AI to image generator, text to image generator, and then they just type in a few words and they see if it's close enough to what they wanted. And I think close enough is the objective term there. You're not getting something that you wanted to create as an artist and you're happy with. You're getting something that the AI was happy enough with. I think that's all the time we have for today. It seems like that discussion isn't quite over with this. There's still more ground to be covered, but I think we definitely need the help of some technologists or some tried and true artists to understand a lot more about this topic. Thank you for listening to the Canadian Philosophy Show. My name is Aaron Wang, and I've been joined by my co-host, Brandon Brownlee.
Archived recordings of the Canadian Philosophy Show on mixcloud.com/thecanadianphilosophyshow and tcps.podbean.com.
I know the way you've been looking at me for half a year. Stand for your failures and discontents. The restlessness that impels you to drop cold calls, cold texts, luring me into a reaction, baiting me because you didn't know how to get me. Stood my ground and then you turned to anxious rages, impulsive tendencies, harassment, stalking for half a year. And here's the thing, you can't fuck with me the way you have. Because I know I'm a bad bitch, but the question really is, do you? Sacred, your friendships are enemies. The disposability was seen in demand, and you thought that things were bad. Yeah, one of your size, you're so holy, so divine. And you win your eyes, but you're a in disguise. Upon your side, step me, all these boundaries, life to assign with you. Regarding all the ass, aberration of a fine time. You don't like to love me, but you don't like to love me. I lose every ounce of my strength.